Well, this is Dennis Emery, and I'm joined by one of the legendary figures in Kentucky tennis, Eric Quigley, one of the best male players the state's ever produced. Eric, it's great to have you on the show.
Coach, how's it going? Thanks for having me on today.
Well, no problem. Listen, before we get started, I wanted to just list a few of the accomplishments that got you in to the KTA Hall of Fame. You were a four-time state high school champion, three-time All-American in singles, two-time All-American in doubles, an NCAA singles finalist in 2012, and then later as a professional, you qualified for the main draw of the U.S. Open in doubles. And it seems a little weird to be talking to you. How old are you now?
31. Yeah, time flies, doesn't it?
A legend at 31, and you got in the Hall of Fame, you know, like 2 years ago. So it just tells you how great your accomplishments are. Well, Eric, what we want to do is we want to get into what we want to discuss is how did you do it? How did you go from Pee Wee Valley, Kentucky to the U.S. Open? And so let's start with, how did you get started in tennis? Was it your mother?
Yes, it was. So my mom plays and still plays today. She played at the local Louisville Indoor Rack where she worked part-time as well. And, you know, a lot of times where she'd have to work some afternoons and nights, and I'd get to tag along with her. And, you know, when she was done for the night or for the day working, she'd, you know, we'd go out to an open court and she'd feed me some balls, and fell in love with it after that. And I remember many nights when she would have to, you know, close the club up, and, you know, I was still pretty young at 6, 7, 8 years old, and, you know, it was a little past my bedtime and didn't get to go. And I remember just crying, not getting to go and get to play some tennis and hang out at the tennis club. So my mom is definitely the reason you know, a big reason why, you know, I got to do a lot of the things I did in tennis was because of her.
So would she be considered to be your first coach, you think?
I would say so. Yes, absolutely. You know, a lot of the kids, their first time holding a tennis racket is in a little clinic or, you know, with a coach. And, you know, my first times was with was on the court with my mom, which is pretty special. So I would say she was the first coach for sure. And a coach, she never stopped coaching all throughout my career.
You know, I was able to kind of watch this, you know, watch you develop from a young age. You came to our camp some, and, you know, I was, you know, absolutely. Obviously we recruited you later. And my daughter, you know, was the same age as you coming up. So I got to watch you play a lot, watch your development. Here's the thing. You had a special, unique bond with your mother. You know, with the tennis, and you hear so many horror stories about the parents, yeah. You know, and how the parents are overbearing and the parents are the cause of the kids getting out of tennis. What made your mom special, you think?
Well, she realized that this is something that she saw the love that I had for the game. And, you know, she realized that at a young age and realized how much I enjoyed just being around tennis. And so she did everything she could for me to become the best tennis player I could. She, you know, the tournament in Cincinnati, the big master series every year, you know, she loved how much she realized how much I loved to watch it on TV. So, and she, like I said, you know, played herself and enjoyed the game. So what she would do a lot of times is in the summer, she would volunteer at the master series just for fun. So she got to go watch, and so she would sneak me in a little bit. And so I would just go hang out on the practice courts all day. And so she kind of gave me every opportunity to fall in love with the game and gave me every opportunity to play the sport I love as much as I could. So, were there times that, you know, that she pushed me and made me do things that I didn't really want to do? Of course. But I think, you know, that's very necessary and was very important. A lot of times you got to get pushed and do things that you don't want to do, even though, you know, you still love the game or a tournament, you know, necessarily didn't think I needed to go to or whatever. But I think that's important. Obviously, there's a fine line of pushing too hard when there's not that love for the game, or, you know, maybe there's a break needed or something like that. But I think that's part of it, and finding that fine line of pushing too hard and not pushing enough for a parent. And that's tough.
Yeah. The thing that I always noticed was she got you to the tournaments, and I know money was always tight. You know, the thing that I loved about your career early on was, you know, your mother and your family always found a way to create those opportunities for you to play. And I feel like the tournament, you know, it was important for you to be able to go to the tournaments and play. I felt like that was an important part of your development. Did you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I learned a lot. I think there's a lot of guys that can get away with just playing, you know, not as many tournaments, and they have that natural, competition and learn those things on the practice court. And I was one of those guys that needed the matches, that needed to learn my mistakes and growing pains while playing matches. So definitely, you know, playing as much as I could certainly helped me, you know, in my progression throughout my, you know, college, junior, and professional levels there. So playing was a huge factor for me. And and like you said, my mom, you know, made no excuses for me to get to a tournament and did whatever we needed to do to get there. And forever grateful for that.
As a young, you know, part of the reason why we're doing this is to motivate the young players in the state and the parents in the state to motivate their children. Is there any other tips that you could give other than what you've said that might, you know, help a young player develop, might help motivate them?
I was kind of talking to this on a podcast a couple of weeks ago with the payers and players. And I think when I was growing up, like I said, I went to, my mom volunteered at the Cincinnati Master Series. And also we had the 18s National Clay Courts at Louisville Tennis Club. And every couple of years they had the top 10, the National Indoor Collegiate Tournament. So being exposed to that all like every summer, every, you know, third year in the winter for the National Indoors, getting to watch those guys up and close. I mean, the Bryan twins were at Stanford and watching Kentucky play, you know, when I was a young age, and all those guys, you know, playing and seeing, like, those were my idols, and getting to see them up close. And that did a lot for me. And I know we don't have a lot of those tournaments in Louisville anymore, but we still have the Challenger in Lexington and in Cincinnati as well, is still there. And taking your kids and watching those guys up and close and kind of giving them someone to look up to and seeing it not so from not far away on TV, I think is huge. And there's so much value and lessons that can be learned watching them just on the practice court and seeing it. But not only those lessons, but just being able to look up to those guys and seeing them, that level of tennis is not so far away. Getting to see it up close is, I think, is huge, and was a big part of my, love for the game and seeing how cool that was up close. And so I think a big thing that parents can do is kind of anytime that there's a tournament close, always get to Cincinnati, see those guys, watch the practice courts. Anytime you can see good tennis like that up close and personal, I highly recommend it. And I think it can go a long way for your son or daughter.
Well, a great, great tip. And you may or may not know this, Bob and Mike Bryan's father, Wayne Bryan, it's what he always talks about, that he thought he did really well with the twins, was he created a lot of opportunity to watch great players play. What's your earliest memory of tournament tennis?
Yeah. The first tournaments I played were like some novice tournaments at Louisville Indoor Racquet Club. Like I said, that's where I grew up playing. The first tournaments I played were there. I remember not having much success in those tournaments. I remember having a lot of battles there with some local kids at LIRC. Remember kind of always being upset when I lost, and remember those good memories of winning some of those third set battles. but yeah, I remember loving the game, but not having a ton of success at that early age, which I think is pretty common for, you know, obviously your first couple of tournaments, whatever age you are, you can't have too high of expectations. So the love for the game kind of stuck me with it, even though I didn't have a ton of success and always looking to get better, even at a young age.
Do you feel like not having that success early, you know, really helped you later? Because to me it did, you know, it was, you created within yourself this drive to be a great player. We're going to talk about that a little later, but you know, if you'd have come right out and been really successful, I don't know that that would have been good for you.
I think so too. And going back to watching guys play on TV, and that was a huge part of the way I wanted to play even at a young age. I was, I remember my coach at a young age telling me, you know, after a third set loss at about 10, 11 years old, like, look, you just can't come to the net right now. You can't do this on big points, you know, because that's what I was watching on TV, is guys finishing at the net and serving and volleying. And so that's how I try to model my game, is the guys, you know, the cool guys on TV. So obviously, you know, I didn't have the height, the power, the strategy, the consistency, all the factors that go into that. But, you know, I looked up to those guys and I just kept sticking with that game plan. And obviously when I put on some muscle, put on some height, put on some, little more smart or court awareness, everything, you know, some of that started paying off a little bit. But I think if, like you said, if I would have kind of, obviously I hated to lose, but I wasn't willing to just, you know, go into change my game up to just win the match a little bit, I think that did definitely pay off in the end. You know, as I got older, I don't think that was the game plan then. I just wanted to look cool, whether I won or lost, but it definitely paid off in the end for sure.
Where do you feel like you had a breakthrough? Because there was definitely a point where, you know, you were a good player and then you became a really good player and beyond a good state level player, but a really good Southern level player, and then ultimately a national level. Was there a turning point for you? Do you remember something in there?
There was. When I was 14 years old, started working with a trainer named Jay Melton. Realized that I really, you know, really, really enjoyed the game of tennis, really wanted to do something with it, had high goals, and noticed, you know, I need to make some changes. And at 14, started getting the gym, and he was a huge part of my game. I started in January when there's not a whole lot of tournaments. So I had a lot of time right from the beginning, started working with him to make a lot of progress, get in the gym, you know, 3-4 times a week. And, you know, that summer started really seeing some benefits of that. Had my breakout in the Southern tournament where I was, I think, one of the last seeds. And then all of a sudden I made the finals. So that was a huge jump for me. And then followed up with some good results at the national hard courts and national clay courts that summer. And so just really kind of saw the benefits and how important it is to get in the gym and how important it is to be in better shape than your opponents. And so after that, I feel like I steadily kind of got better each age group, each year. Until I think my highest ranking was my like top year 18s when I got to, I'm not sure what I was in the, I think I was top 20, top 30, something like that. But I was top 10, in my recruiting class. I think I got to the highest 6 or something like that. So each year, that was my definitely a big jump, in my junior careers. And each year I feel like, I just made more progress and built on what
you
I
know,
did
what's,
before.
What's funny. And we'll talk about this when we get into your college career. You're someone who just made steady, gradual improvements every year, you know. It never seemed like you took a step back, you know. You just seemed like you got a little bit better every year. Did you continue to work with the strength training guy? Yep. Through your high school career?
I did. Like I said, you know, I immediately saw some results after working out with him for 3-5 months. And I knew that, you know, this is the thing that can really take me over the top and consistently make me better. So I did stick with him and made that definitely a priority each year, getting stronger, improving, and eventually kind of instead of going from 3 days a week, going to four when I got a little bit older and had some a strong base to work from, and then could really kind of add some power. And so, yeah, that was definitely a priority. You know, my whole high school and most of my middle school.
Well, unlike many, you know, young players, you made a commitment to going into the weight room and doing some stuff. Now, you know, I have to tell you, you had a body that could put on things, you know, could put on muscle and stuff. A lot of kids don't, but you did.
Yes.
And so it was a really good fit for you. Some of your top junior results,
yes,
that I remember, Spring Nationals, when I think you were 18, you beat Bradley Klon,
yep,
who was one of the top players in the country from California. Do you remember that,
yes,
match?
I do. I remember he was a really good player. He was seeded high in that tournament. Knew him. I knew his results, knew how good of a player he was. Played really well, kind of took it to him right away. I think it was pretty straightforward match, like 3-3, 4-4. Pretty happy with that result. I remember that for sure. I remember how impressed I was with his game, watching him, and then getting out there and you know, kind of taking care of it. It's definitely a match I remember from my junior career.
Yeah, you always seem to play these matches against the player who was maybe favored or ranked a little higher than you. You always seem to play those matches really well. I mean, from an early age on, you seem to do that. Why do you think that was?
I think I was kind of reflecting on that a little bit, why I think some players in the pros do better than others. And I think I fall in this category a little bit. When you play someone better than you, you know, like, you can't mess around. You have to have a strict, like, clear game plan. And I think that's what I did well with those players. I knew that I couldn't, you know, like, if this wasn't working, I knew this is what I do best, and this is what I'm going to have to do in order to try to get a win today. And so there was no real kind of second guessing myself. If it's not working in the beginning, I know I just got to stick with it, because this is the best chance to give me, you know, this is the best opportunity I have to win this match. And so I think when you have that clear game plan, it just makes things a little bit easier. There's no like second guessing when you're playing someone that you feel that you're a little bit better than, or you've beaten in the past, and maybe like your game plan when you go out isn't working. You kind of start second guessing, and you think about, you know, other things you can do to win. And then all of a sudden you're just thinking a little too much and trying to come up with plan B, plan C, versus when you're playing someone, you know, that's really good, you know, that the game plan's clear and you got to execute. And if it's not working, then you got to stick with it. And I think just things are a little bit more clear in your head, which is huge in tennis, really any sport.
You know, when I was working with you in college, I felt like the thing that you did great was your game plan was very cut and dried, and it was, as General Patton said, very simple, direct, and ruthless. And you know, I thought you know, you did a great job of that. We'll talk about that a little more in the college. You won the Southern 18s, I believe, the Southern 18 close, is that correct?
I
Tell
did
me about
yes
that.
Top of your 18s. That was, it was a, kind of a, obviously my last year, last chance to win it. I had made the finals my top year 14s, like I said. I think when I was top year 16s, I was one of the top, I think might have been the top seed or the top two or three seeds. I think I lost in the finals of the back draw, so that was a little disappointing. So finally, I had a good year going into the 18s. Really thought I had a great chance to win it. And, you know, I feel like I was the guy to beat in that tournament, and to win it with kind of those circumstances, I was really kind of proud of myself to obviously get over the hurdle of second place and being one of the top seeds and all that, and putting all that pressure and kind of target on your back a little bit. I was really proud of that result. Played a good player named Bo Seal, who ended up at Georgia in the finals, who was a little bit younger than me playing up. So I feel like he was kind of he was a clean ball striker. And I think he was kind of felt like he could swing for the fences in that match a little bit. So to come out as the older guy, last chance, been there before, but not quite gotten over the hurdle of winning it. I think that was definitely one of my prouder moments in juniors, how I handled that whole tournament. Not every match was super easy. I had a couple of third setters in there, but you know, dealing with the pressure and the target on my back, I was really, really happy with how I handled
that's
all that.
That's great. Well, I'm gonna remind you about two more matches here that I saw you play that impacted directly on my life. The first one was I went up to Kalamazoo to watch you before your senior year in high school, and you ended up in the back draw. You were seeded in the tournament, but you ended up in the back draw and you played Steve Johnson, who you later played in the NCAAs. Do you remember that match?
Yes, absolutely. I remember exactly what court it was at the main courts at Kalamazoo. I think it was early in the morning. So, you know, all the main draw matches and the quote unquote high seed guys were playing a little bit later in the day. Not many people were watching that. And I don't think many people would at that time would have said that this is going to be the end.
Yeah.
I remember the same way he does now, a great serve, good forehand, a lot of spin on the forehand and backhand, but sliced a lot the backhand, did really well of getting around it and hitting forehands and had a great running forehand. So I feel like I played him really smart and played well both times and was able to take him out in that match and at Spring Nationals when I played him, I think that same year, a year before. I think there was you, maybe the Florida coach, and maybe a couple other people watching that match, and that was it. I don't think, like I said, anyone was thinking that was going to be the NCAA finals in 4 years.
I'm gonna be really honest with you here. You know, I watched you play that match, and I know college coaches say all the time, "Oh, this is wonderful. I'm so happy for you and great win." And I remember distinctly, I had to leave after that match and drive back to Lexington. And so I didn't get to watch your next match, but I'd watched all of them up to then. And obviously you were number one on our list. And I remember thinking we may have just lost Quigley, you know, and you know, it's going to be hard for me to be transparent that I really wanted him to beat Steve Johnson. You know, it's going to be hard for me. You know, later that fall, we hosted an ITF Grade 1, and you played in it.
Yep.
We made sure you got into that because you didn't get to play a lot of the ITFs. You know, the finances and everything didn't line up for you to do that. But this one happened to come right there, and you played a really good player in the first round from Mexico. Do you remember that match? Because I have one distinct memory of that match.
I do, yeah, I remember that. And I actually played Ryan Harrison.
That's right.
Before that. Yes, and took him out. I was down. That was a big win for me. And I remember I lost the first set, was down, and actually had a went up for an overhead and just completely missed it, but had enough time to get back and kind of came up with this flick passing shot. And that was kind of relaxed me and actually turned around the match a little bit. And so won that. And then I played the guy from Mexico. Right. I can't remember his name, but I remember being down, I think 6-0 or 6-1 in the tiebreaker. And then I got it to 7-6. And then I think lost it from there, like 9-7, 10-8, something like that. And then, I think the second set was kind of routine, but
I remember him making several bad calls.
Go ahead.
In that first set, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking,
yes.
Well, you know, the good news is Quigley's on our campus and he's having a lot of success. You know, the bad news is, you know, he just beat Ryan Harris. You know, and we set it up for him to play this tournament, you know, and he's going to get all this exposure from the tournament. But in any case, that was what I remember was that kid made, you know, a series of bad calls. And I can't remember his name either. you know, so we're not speaking ill of him. But
yes,
you know, you seem to always handle those things very well. Why do you think that was? And what tips could you maybe give the young players here in the state?
I think when I started working with my trainer, he focused obviously a lot on my strength and conditioning, but he also focused on kind of a lot of other aspects of just competing. And one of the biggest things was, especially when I first started, you know, I wasn't very strong first time really kind of getting in the gym a little bit. So it didn't take long for me to get tired. And, you know, I would kind of wear my emotions on the sleeve a little bit. When you're tired and you're trying to get that one extra rep, I kind of look like, you know, I was trying to lift the just something incredibly heavier. So, and he focused on like kind of my facial expressions and how I was perceived on the court, and how his big thing was when you see someone tired or giving up or angry, how much energy it gives you. So we don't ever want to kind of give that away a little bit. So he made my mom come in, and we'd do a lot of exercises in the mirror, and she would just have to record kind of my face and kind of what I look like in the, you know, doing something pretty difficult and when I'm tired or, and so I'd have to go home and kind of watch that, just stare at my face and kind of what I look like a little bit. So we really worked on, kind of poker face a little bit, and, no matter how tired you are, never giving your opponent anything, and how much energy, that can give them when you look down and out a little bit. So that's a lot of where that came from. And my trainer always was good at kind of putting me in uncomfortable positions. So we were always working on endurance kind of strength wise, but yet like strength endurance wise with the mentally as well. So he's always putting me in uncomfortable situations, which, you know, a lot of times on the court, when you, it's a big point, it's it's uncomfortable because you want to win it, and, you know, you want to figure out the outcome, and you want to know if you win or lose. So, it's always hard to replicate a match, but I feel like we did a lot to get as close as we darn could to the kind of those pressures and those highs and lows, and giving that poker face on the court. And I think that's where a lot of that came from, because I really bought into that a little bit, how just giving that poker face, don't give your opponent anything expression.
But the point being, you worked on that. You know, yes, a lot of that came natural, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, your college, but you worked on it at a young age, and the young players in Kentucky now need to be able to work on that too, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think a lot of juniors I see, you know, they're hitting with their friends, which is obviously, there's nothing wrong with that. Getting out and playing as much as you can. I'm always a big fan of that. But what I did, as I was 14, 15, 16, I hit with a lot of adults. I hit with a lot of people I wasn't exactly friends with. So even though it's, you know, I'm just playing a practice set and practice drills like that, I wasn't exactly always comfortable. It wasn't always my best friend who were, you know, talking and telling jokes on the sidelines. So I think that's another thing that a lot of juniors can work on, is obviously the facial expressions, but just putting yourself in uncomfortable situations, because I think that's what matches are a lot, is uncomfortable, you know, situations when you're down, or it's a really big point or a match you really want to win, and just trying to figure out those, or put yourself in those scenarios. So just when it comes time to a match, you're kind of used to a little bit, able to function in those kind of uncomfortable situations. So I think that's, something juniors can work on a lot, is maybe find people that you don't really know very well, or not really traditional game styles and stuff like that. Just try to put yourself where you have to figure it out. And so next time in a match, you're ready.
Okay. Let's talk about, you know, you win four state high school titles, and there's three players in the history of Kentucky that have done that. There's you, there's Gary Plock, and Tim Cooper, you know, who played for St. X. Gary Plock obviously played for Ballard. So you're one of only three, you know, and what's impressive is there's been a lot of great players, you know, from Matthew Emery to Jackie Cooper to Mickey Shad, a lot of great players who were not able to win three. You know, I mean, while while it's easy to look at it and say these were the great guys who did it, you know, when you look back and you see who wasn't able to do it, you know, for whatever the reason, I think it's even more impressive. What do you remember about winning as a ninth grader? Is there anything that stood out to you about that?
I remember the year before when I was eighth grade, I lost a tough match against Ben Close from St. X and lost in three sets in the quarterfinals. And I remember that just really stuck with me. It was just my mom watching and my high school coach. And he had a whole bunch of, you know, other players there that were also playing in state. And I think the mascot was there and stuff. And I feel like that just really stuck with me. And I remember all that year, how much I wanted to win it that next year. And I played Kyle Virgin, who also a teammate at Kentucky, in the finals my freshman year. He had a tough match against Shane Collins in the semis. And honestly, I think they wore each other out a little bit. But I played him, Kyle Virgin, a couple weeks before that in like a Southern tournament. And I took him out. So that gave me a lot of confidence knowing I could take out that senior my freshman year. But I just remember, you know, how much I really wanted to win it. But yet I still feel like I kind of was relaxed out there. Didn't really have that pressure on myself.
I saw a picture of you the other day. You weren't that big a guy when you were in the ninth grade.
I wasn't. No. You know, it was a process getting some weight on and getting that foundation on and, you know, in the gym. So even, you know, after a couple of years of working on it, still took a while for the body to show up.
So you come back the second year, you're the defending champion. You remember anything about your sophomore year?
I just remember every year in the finals, I remember going in the match and I just had the best mentality, I think, going into it, just thinking, man, if he's going to beat me today, like, I'm going to give it all I got, like, if for him to beat me. And if he beats me, then too good. And I just remember each year, even in my senior year when, you know, I feel like obviously that was should have been the most pressure, knowing I'd won my freshman, sophomore, junior year, and for to come a little short in the senior, that would just look a little funny. So each year I just felt like I had the best mentality. I went in with confidence, knowing I could beat that guy and had done it in the past, and yet like still having that chip on my shoulder. So I feel like that was kind of I just went in with the best attitude and the best mentality going into each final. And it really, really paid off.
Who did you beat as a sophomore? Do you remember?
I think I beat Casey Blythe, who was a senior at St. X.
What about as a junior?
Mm-hmm. Robert Stedman, who was I practiced with him a lot. He went to Trinity, practiced with him a lot. And then I played Philip Arndt in the finals my
Good
senior
player,
year.
Good player, tough lefty.
So, yes. Yeah, who I struggled with a little bit, I think, earlier that year just in a tournament. And but I think the nerves got to him a little bit. And, you know, I was, like I said, had that good mentality and kind of got off to a good start, and which gave me confidence and kind of hurt him a little bit. So I always feel like I just handled the moment better than my opponent and had confidence, but yet was ready to kind of dogfight if I needed to. So, I think that really paid off the mentality I went into each match in the finals of those four state championships.
You know, by that point you've become one of the best players in the country. You know, you're top 20 in the country, and I think it would have been easy for you to say, I'm not going to play the state high school, and that never appeared to be an option for you. It appeared that you loved playing the state high school tournament. And, you know, you really projected, like, I enjoy being out here. And you never projected, I'm feeling a lot of pressure to become the third guy to ever win four, you know. And the thing that I noticed was, you know, sometimes some of the high school players feel like, I'm too good to play high school. Or, you know, sometimes you get the feeling, they don't want to be exposed to a possible loss you know, because of their thing. And you never projected that. You always projected how much you enjoyed it. Why do you think that was? Was it the publicity that you got from it, or just the inner drive that you got?
I think there was both. It was winning state champions, especially in high school. You go back and, you know, your buddy's like, man, that's awesome. You know, I really enjoyed that. But it just never really crossed my mind. I guess it just never really crossed my mind to not play it. Like, oh, I won it my freshman year. Let's call it a career. And I think that was something I did really well. You know, whether it's Southerns, going back, I was never someone that, you know, was super always like one in the country, something like that. So I was never, you know, always looking to play up or anything like that. But I think that pressure, which I think some kids do sometimes, is, you know, they avoid it a little bit. They'll play up so there's no pressure, and anything they do is, you know, just a bonus a little bit. And I think the playing in your age group and playing when you're the top guy, the target on your back, I think that's almost harder sometimes than playing up and playing guys that are bigger and you're not necessarily supposed to beat. But yeah, I don't think that ever really crossed my mind to sit it out or come up with an injury, you know, the week before or anything like that. It just, like I said, I always went in, and I think each year I always did a lot of training. I feel like I'd always have like a training block, or it was right before spring break where I'd go to Florida sometimes, IMG, the week before. So I always felt like I was ready to go and had that confidence and felt like I was in good shape and on the peak, playing, you know, some really good tennis. So, you know, I never really thought like, you know, I'm not playing great right now. My forehand's not there. You know, maybe I can try to get out of this in case something bad happens. So it just wasn't there. I always could trust the body. Never felt like I was, you know, had a tweak or an injury or something that could maybe kind of derail it a little bit. So I always felt like I was ready to go, and, you know, so just never really crossed my mind.
Well, I know you had a special relationship with your coach, Woody McGraw.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. He's still coaching now, and he was a good player himself, still is, still travels and plays a lot of Southern national tournaments. And he really took his job seriously, and which made it a lot of fun for me. And he kind of understood the situation. And, you know, when I was playing good, and, you know, he always just let me kind of do my thing a little bit, you know, especially when I was playing well and up in the matches. You know, he wasn't trying to, you know, come up with a crazy game plan in the middle of the match or anything like that. And so his passion for what he did and for tennis, and it really kind of was infectious. And, you know, it was a lot of fun for him to coach me.
Yeah. It really came across in both of you all. Well, we'll wrap up your high school career. But before we do, I remember they named the high school court for you there.
They did. So cool. Yep. So they were building new tennis courts. We had to play at what was the elementary school, which was kind of connected to the high school there, where we would feed into the high school. And the courts, they had four courts. And after I graduated, they started building new courts on site at the high school. And so they brought me back. It was my freshman year at Kentucky, and had a little ceremony because at the same time they also built a new baseball field. And so they had a little opening for the tennis court and the new baseball field. And they named court one after me, which is really cool. And still every now and then I'll drive by and check it out just to see my name up there.
That's great. Well, let's move into the next phase of your career, which was the college years. And like I said, you know, what I saw coaching you was just a steady improvement over 4 years. And a day that I remember was, you know, the first day we had you on campus as a player, and I always tried to not create something that wasn't there, you know, like I didn't want to create a lot of hype for somebody, you know, put a lot of extra pressure on them. And I remember having you and Bruno Agostinelli go out to hit one day on campus. You guys, very similar personalities, and that you, at that point, you all were both quiet and reserved and very serious and very competitive. And I remember watching you all hit and thinking, oh my God, Quigley is going to be really good. You know, because Bruno got up to number two in the country that year and finished the year number four. Was a great player. But your freshman year, we played you at number three. You could have played higher, but I played you at three because I thought we wanted to get you some confidence moving forward and get you off to a good start. You and a boy named Alex Musilek came in and really changed the culture, because you two were both very, very competitive. Tell me about your freshman year. Anything that stands out to you about that?
Well, the first time I hit with Bruno was the summer, and we were going to play a tournament in Glasgow, Kentucky. And so I came there a day early, and we went down together and played. And I remember the first time hitting with him, I couldn't really keep up a little bit, just hitting up the middle a little bit. He, just wasn't used to seeing that pace consistently. And so we went and we played each other in the finals. And Bruno is one of those guys that every time I played him, he just always brought out the best of me. I had so much respect for him even then when I just kind of met him. I just know I had to really kind of play my best game to give myself a chance to win against him. And I did that day, and that gave me a lot of confidence. But Bruno is one of those guys you just always had a lot of respect for. Even when I beat him, I was never thinking like, ooh, I can maybe sneak in and play one, my freshman year. It was never like that. It was just like, man, like that was an awesome result for me to do that. And getting to be around him was super cool, before going into my freshman year. So that helped a lot, getting to kind of build that bond with him a little bit and getting such a good win going in. I think that was like a month and a half before school started. So that gave me a good start. But I remember we had a lot of talent coming in. Like you said, Alex Musilek, who was my roommate, and who was also a great player. And I remember practicing with him for the first time and played a game to 10. And I think he killed me. And then we had a guy, Graham Dice, who was highly recruited and highly ranked. So I just remember like, man, these guys I'm going to be lucky just to play right behind them. And so, I just went in with some confidence, but yet, had a lot of respect for all the other guys coming in, and was just really happy to play. And so, just got to be around, like I said, Bruno, learn a lot from those guys. I thought three was a great spot for me. I had a lot of success, which gave me confidence going into my sophomore, junior, and senior year. And just kind of had a really good time overall 4 years with all my teammates. We all respected each other, all lived with each other, were close. And I think that was a huge part of our success.
Well, you finished your freshman year, you were ranked 124 in the country. You'd gotten up higher than that, but when you're playing three, you don't get some of the opportunities for the big wins. So you finished that, and then the next year you moved up to the number one spot. Bruno graduated at that point, went to the quarterfinals of the NCAAs that year and moved up and then went on and played pro tennis. But you played number one for 3 years. And as a sophomore, you finished top 10 in the country. You make All-American. You lead our team to a win over number one Virginia by winning your singles and your doubles. What else? Mm-hmm. Anything else you remember about your sophomore year?
Sophomore year is when I kind of had a breakout at All-Americans. I played Alexander Nedorozov, first round of All-Americans. I took him out. He was the one seed, number one in the country. He was a senior from Oklahoma State, and beat him. And that really, really gave me some confidence there. And not only did I take him out, but I followed up with some good results. Some good wins right after that in that same tournament, and made the quarters. So had a good start, and that was in the fall. The season's in the spring. So, I had some good results. That year I got to go to France and compete in for the equivalent of like the Davis Cup at college. And I clinched playing mixed doubles. It came down to my court and clinched for the U.S. over France. So that was really cool to not only win that, but come back and have some bragging rights over my teammates from France. I had a really good fall there into my sophomore, which obviously didn't help it, which helped me going into the season. And kind of that was my breakout, was that I feel like that fall of my sophomore year.
Your freshman year, did you play Nedorozov at UK?
I did, yes. That you guys, UK hosted a selected tournament for guys who, whoever won it, got a wild card into the Cincinnati qualifying. And he was there, and I played him first round. And I did good. Held my own, but it was a close match, but it really wasn't, I feel like, that close. He definitely kind of handled the match the whole time, played well, but just really wasn't ready to win a match like that against someone that good. I just didn't quite have the consistency, you know, as I did in my sophomore year to take him out. So I did. So I got to look at, kind of knew what I was up against a little bit, but, and I was ready that second time for the occasion.
You, my memory of that match was how hard you took that loss. And I remember sitting with you in our locker room after that match, trying to tell you, look, I mean, you're going to be great. You know, you've done this is not a bad result, but you took it really hard. Now, I'm not saying in a bad way, you know, you took it really hard in a good way. And the thing that I loved about you was, every time that you had a loss, I felt like it made you better. And it's we kind of talked about that earlier in your career, but I thought it was one of the great things that you had going for you was losses. You took them hard, but they never got you down. They just made you work harder. Your junior year, again, you finished top 10 in the country. Our team makes another jump. We go back to the Sweet 16, and then we in the Sweet 16 we play Florida and beat them, so we advance to the Elite Eight. You know,
yes,
place we hadn't been for a while. And we also lost in the finals of the SEC tournament. Anything, anything, your junior year that stands out to you?
That I kind of had. Ended my junior year, didn't finish the way I wanted to. You know, like I said, had a big sophomore year, kind of a breakout sophomore year. That year kind of felt the pressure of, not necessarily felt the pressure, but just know we really had a special team, had a lot of talent on that team, and really kind of, I guess it was disappointed how I played to finish. You know, we made the Elite Eight. I had played a lot of tough guys, Steve Johnson, you know, who we played USC in the Southern Cal in the Elite Eight, and not a bad loss there. But I just remember kind of I felt like I left a few matches on the table there my junior year, which I think it helped. I know it did. It helped me kind of going all that summer, really kind of going back to those losses helped me a lot going all summer, knowing what I need to work on. And I don't want to finish my college career this way. And so it made me work real hard, and as much of a bummer as it was my junior year kind of finishing that way, it really helped me prepare for my senior year and kind of put a chip on my shoulder all senior year.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with what you're saying anymore. I want to kind of get off of results here, but going into your senior year, I always felt like, and I've told you this before, you had the highest emotional intelligence of anybody that we ever had at the university, at least in my 30 years. You know, you never appeared to be rattled. You never had any, in 4 years, I can't remember one dispute that you had on the court, you know, not with, not with a teammate and not with an opponent and not with an official. But you had that, just what I would term a high emotional intelligence. Do you think that's something that you were born with? You know, I know we talked a little bit about earlier how you worked on this with your coach, but is that something that was inherent, do you feel like, in your nature a little bit?
A little bit. It's definitely something I had to work on, but I think it was there a little bit. Just not my kind of personality now to, you know, wear my emotions on the sleeve and pretty even keel, I would say. So I think it was there, but it was definitely something I had to learn and focus on. And it just became kind of natural, really, because I really, like I said, worked on that at a young age. So it just became pretty natural when I got to college and pros. So I think that definitely helped me a lot. I didn't waste unnecessary energy at getting mad or something I can't really control. So obviously, you know, the emotions were there. You know, obviously a lot of people go through, you know, extreme disappointment when, you know, you get a break point and you get a shot to, you know, easy forehand or whatever to finish it. And you miss it or whatever. And obviously the disappointment's there, but just, just really did a good job and, of just not showing that emotion and getting ready for the next point. And I think that helped me a lot for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your senior year. How would you describe your game at this point?
I still played the same, very aggressive minded, just had 3 years of college of practicing, you know, with good player, you know, all my good teammates for 3 years, had really good, hopes and dreams of playing pro. So, you know, I knew that wasn't the end of my tennis career after that. But I think I just had the consistency of, you know, being able to serve, the return, everything, the consistency was there. And just a little bit more, everything was a little bit more sharper going into my senior year. And I had that a little bit more confidence going into that year.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Your game, I would say your return game, you were somebody who loved to take the ball early.
And, yes.
You know, I remember talking with Jose Higueras one time and him telling me, look, I feel like he needs to back up to return. And I said, look, I get it. You know, I know what you're saying, but you have to understand he grew up on lightning fast indoor courts, you know, yes. And taking the ball early is what comes natural for him. Mm-hmm. Is that, do you feel like that's true? That was something that came natural for you?
I do. Like I said, it's something you got to work on, but I think it did come pretty natural to me. And it's something I definitely try to impose in every single match I played. Was how much time can I take away from my opponent? And that's something I always find myself going back to. And when I'm giving lessons now, I always try to, you know, tell my student or whatever, whoever I'm working with, you know, how early can you get to the ball? Obviously you don't want to be rushed and just running right through the ball and then you're out of control. But I always find myself kind of like, man, you can take that ball so much early. You can take so much time, the importance of that. And that's something I think I try to do every single match. I knew that's something I did well. I knew it's something that, you know, not everyone could do. And so I always try to do that every single match, impose my will. I feel like I could hit the ball a little bit harder than most people. And not only that, but take the ball early and take time between that combo. I thought of taking it early and being able to create a lot of pace on the ball. I thought that was something I could do that most people can't. So I always tried to incorporate that in every game plan for sure.
Well, the thing that you did great was, you know, people can take it early with their two-handed backhand. And, you know, a lot of people can do that. Where people get in trouble is, okay, the guy now going to serve your forehand, you know, because, you know, he's going to attack that semi-Western grip or Western grip. And people end up chipping that ball back.
Yes.
You never did that really. You got to where you had to chip some, but you know, for the most part, you were hitting over that ball.
I was. And I think that, I guess a little, for all the kids listening, just cause someone has a good forehand doesn't mean that their forehand return is the best return. So I thought my best return was backhand cross court, especially in doubles. That was my bread and butter.
Right.
So a lot of people, you know, would hit it to my backhand, even though it was my strength, but I always, held the forehand grip. A lot of people, I think when they expect something, they'll kind of even just change their grip a little bit, but I feel like I perfected kind of that switch from the forehand to the backhand real fast. And that was something, I could abbreviate real fast. And I did a good job of just keeping the racket real short, you know, and keeping the ball out in front of me and using the ability to move into the ball, where I get the power instead of taking a big swing. So I could get away with, you know, short back swing. So I never really caught the ball late, on returns for the most part. So, I feel like just the return was something I always did real well, and I always saw the ball early. Thought I always had a pretty good read on the server. So just overall, I feel like I had a lot of characteristics that help on returns.
Yeah, and your so that was your return game strategy, and your mm-hmm. serve game strategy was always, you know, to serve big enough to create a short ball or a forehand on the first ball of the rally that you had.
Yes.
How did you develop your forehand? Did someone teach you your forehand, or did you just – is that something you just developed? Because the sequence of how you used your legs, your contact point, all those things, they fired so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
What was the foundation of that?
That's another thing I always try to work on with juniors is I think a lot of kids don't know where power comes from in their body and how to use it. And I think that's something I perfected. And a lot of it was in the gym, you know, with the medicine ball throws against the walls. And my coach, Rob Spencer, he really, really helped me with my forehand and just understanding that the legs and the core are so important in the rotation through the ball. Having that good footwork and seeing the ball early, it always helps when you can get there early and get your feet set, and you can really use your body to help you. And I think I just did a lot of those, and I had that strong foundation with the legs. So when I was set up and really could use help with my legs, that it was there and could really help me, you know, put all I got into each ball there. And that's something I always strive to do is every single ball. Sometimes it hurt me going for a little too much, but always trying to impose on my opponent with the power and taking it early. So yeah.
I felt like what you did as you got better was you learned what shots to do that on, you know, mm-hmm. and what shots not to sort of overplay. And that took your error ratio down. And you know, you became your senior year, as the records would bear out, was, you know, your best year. Mm-hmm. So we head into your senior year. Our team is top 10 again. We win the SEC. We go undefeated 11-0, you know, which is tremendous.
Absolutely.
You know, when you figure out, you know, my God, it's the SEC and there's, you know, four or five teams in there that were top 10 during the year.
Yep.
You know, a big win for us. And I mm-hmm. know you had been interested in going to Georgia in the recruiting process, but a big win for us your senior year was we went down to Georgia and we won 4-3. We were down 3-2 in matches, and you were down a break in the third at number one to Will Spencer,
mm-hmm.
who was really good on those outdoor courts, you know, because
yes.
he could flip the ball around. He was somebody who could create some problems for you outdoors, but it rains.
Yeah.
You know, it rains. You're down a break in the third. I don't know quite what the score was. I don't remember that.
Yes.
I was doing another match, you know, with Tom Jambi. But you go indoors, and I don't know if you lose another game or you just run him out completely. But what were you thinking during that time?
Well, my Alex Musilek, who played two for us, he played him earlier that year, and just kind of his game really matched up, and he played him really smart, and he kind of went. I always struggle with Will Spencer. Like you said, Will was one that was a counter puncher who liked guys that played like me, who could just, if he could just make that one extra ball, make me go for a little bit extra. I always kind of struggled with him. So this was a big, big match for me. And cause he owned me really kind of in some other matches previous to this one. So I thought I did a good job of sometimes I would, you know, get a little impatient going for too much, and that's what got me down the break. But I feel like going indoors really kind of relaxed me, knowing the court speed's helping me a little bit. I can take a little pace off. I don't have to go as close to the lines. And I really played him smart, and that was kind of one from help from you guys, the coaching staff, and from Alex. They're just kind of finally not going for so much and being patient, really waiting for the right ball to attack. And once I did that, I really had a lot of success. And that was a big, big match for me, big match in the SEC as a team. Getting a win over Will Spencer for me was big. And I think my match made it 3-all, and then Tom Jambi played the best tiebreaker I've ever seen, and won us the match 4-3. And so we always kind of struggled, had a lot of close matches my whole, 3 years prior to that with Georgia, lost some tough ones. And so for us to get over the hurdle, be in first place of the SEC, was awesome. Was really cool. And it could have happened in a, a better place at Georgia. So the whole kind of scenario was just perfect.
I agree. Yes. Couldn't happen to a better group of guys.
Oh man, that's right.
Well, your senior year, there's just so many accolades that came your way. You were named Mr. Wildcat for the second time, special award. What did that mean to you?
That was incredible. I didn't think anyone could win that twice. So winning just the award once was absolutely so cool, and to win it twice, be the first person I think at UK to win Mr. Wildcat two times in their career was super cool. There was all 4 years I was there. There was definitely so many worthy candidates that could win that and that deserved it. And so for me to win that was just so cool. And I thought several times about kind of that last month and a half, 2 months of my college where I graduated. The basketball team won the NCAA tournament, won the national championship. We won the SEC, made the finals NCAAs, broke the record. There was just so many things just in a 2 month span. I turned pro. That just was pretty incredible and a pretty incredible way to finish a college career. So, obviously I would have liked to win, our team to, we had a disappointing loss to Stanford in the round of 16, which definitely hurt big time. But that helped me, I think, go on a good run and really compete and finish somewhat on a good note in the singles there and in doubles as well. So, obviously I would have liked to win, not get second at NCAAs, and would have been pretty sweet to win as my last match in college. But, looking back in those last 2 months and those 4 years at college were pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, what I remember about the Mr. Wildcat thing was your mom calling me and saying, Eric's nominated for Mr. Wildcat. And I said, Kathy, look, you have to understand, nobody wins that twice. it's maybe isn't even fair, but nobody wins it twice.
Yeah.
And she said, well, do you think I should come down for this? And I said, not if you're coming down thinking he's going to win. I don't want you to be disappointed. And of course, I'm trying to ask.
Yeah.
I'm kind of trying to ask the people who do the awards, who's winning, and they're not telling me anything.
Yeah.
They're not giving me any feedback at all. So your mom does come down and you do win, but I'm telling you, it caught me off guard as much as anybody. you're named SEC Player of the Year because you were undefeated in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, let me back up. I felt like of all the things you did, winning Mr. Wildcat, I thought that maybe meant the most to your family. It seemed to me, because of what it implied from a character standpoint. It's so much more than just being a great player. And I thought the great thing about it was Mitch Barnhart gave you, because he's a big part of that Mr. Wildcat. Mm-hmm. He awarded you that Mr. Wildcat before you went to the NCAA finals.
Yeah.
you won it before that. And the NCAA finals was the icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
You also win the Rafael Osuna Award, which is similar to Mr. Wildcat. It's just your competition is, other college tennis players.
Yes.
Instead of all the athletes at the university.
Yeah.
Let's talk just briefly here about the NCAA tournament, and we'll just skip to the finals. You had a great win in the semis against Ohio State's player Blas Rolla, 7-6 in the third. And now you're playing in the finals. You're playing Steve Johnson.
Yep.
And it's a historical match because you have won 171 singles matches. And if you win this one, you become Number 172 makes you the winningest singles player of all time. If you lose, you're tied at 171. And we didn't talk to you about this, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, because we didn't want to put that pressure on you.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Johnson had won 71, I think, straight matches.
Yep.
In his junior and senior year, and was the defending NCAA champion. And so if he wins, he's won 4 team titles and 2 NCAA singles titles.
Yep.
So what are your memories of that match?
Well, going in, obviously I knew that he was, you know, he hadn't lost. He's the guy to beat. He won it last year. He just won the team. But I just remember kind of going in, it was a long week, a long couple weeks. Just kind of thinking this is kind of the end a little bit in a good way. So going in with I thought a good attitude, kind of thought I could play a little bit more relaxed. He had the target on his back. I could play with that chip on the shoulder, which really I like to play with, and give me the best chance to win, best attitude out there. And I just kind of remember a few times I just, was up in the games. And both times I was up, I think 40-15, got broken, and that was enough for the first set. And then the same thing in the second. I think I was up 30-11 in the game that I got broken. And I had some chances to break, get back on serve in both sets, and he came up with the goods. I think I even guessed right sometimes on the serve. And, I mean, he just hit his spot so well and came up with the goods on big points. And you know, as going into the match, I remember thinking like, man, what a good opportunity to finish what's already been an amazing college career, and what can give me a jump start on the pro tour. Because most times, if you win the NCAA tournament, you know, you get a wild card into the main draw U.S. Open, and what a great way to start your, you know, a pro career is playing a main draw Grand Slam. So just kind of thinking, you know, what this match can do for me, you know, both college wise and a jumpstart in my pro career. So, you know, it was bittersweet at the end. You know, I just remember kind of finishing the match, and, you know, a lot of my family came and friends came, drove down, and which was so cool to have them there in that moment. And just kind of saying bye to them. And I remember, kind of my mom asked like, well, do you want to drive back with us, or, you know, and I said, I think I want to go back with the team. Not that I didn't want to drive back with my mom, but just kind of, I knew that was the last time that, you know, the road trip where you have so many road trips, and just kind of wanted to finish it off that way. So I just remember it was bittersweet at the end. And, you know, a lot of my teammates were still there because they, you know, competed in singles and doubles, and for them to be there and just drive back, it kind of happened all fast and just bittersweet, I think, is the best way to say it, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, you finish your career with 171 singles wins. And as we mentioned, you know, you're tied for the most singles win ever in a career. And I think it's fitting that, you know, it's you, because if anybody loved to play matches and who was a workhorse, you know, it was definitely you. So the Iron Man record, you know, should belong to you.
Yes.
And I know something that was very important to you and to me and your family was that you graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to be able to do that with all the pressure you were feeling in the tennis and all the school you had to miss, you know, because you had to miss a lot of school, particularly in the falls when you were playing those tournaments that were a week long, you know, very, very difficult. So you graduated, and, you know, a tremendous accomplishment.
Yes, for sure.
Is there anything else that on your college career, looking back? If not, it's fine. I'm just wondering, is there anything else?
Oh, man. Just how much fun it was. Just I think that one of the biggest things is in college is like how important it is to get along with your teammates. And, you know, if there's that chemistry is not there, there's a little turmoil in the locker room, and, you know, the guys just don't really get along. You're not friends. It's just really tough to do kind of the things that we, you know, we were able to do just because we were all friends. We all lived together. We all hung out together and, you know, really loved each other. And I think it makes a big difference in whether, you know, how much success you have at the college level. So I think for anyone that's looking at college, how important it is to, one, you know, like your college coaches, and yet really try to spend a lot of time with the guys that you're going to be, you know, spending the 4 years with, is because that is a huge factor of how much success you're going to have, whether you guys get along and actually care about each other and fighting, you know, right next to each other during matches. So I think that was just another reason why we were able to have so much success as a team, is because we all really cared for each other and really, really got along.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You all had a lot of respect for each other, and everybody respected you. But the thing that you did great was you respected everyone else. And for example, Alex Musilek, you know, also a really hard worker. He was 15 in the country. When you finished 3 in the country your senior year, he finished 15 yep. in the country. And, you know, it would have been easy for him to have resented your success. Mm-hmm. And he didn't, because he had so much respect for you. But part of the reason why he had a lot of respect for you was, I think he knew how much respect you had for him as a player. And I think that made it easier. Yep. Let's talk about the, you know, the third phase of your pro of your career, which is your pro career. You know, you got up to your highest singles ranking, I think, was 280. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep.
You know, and what was your highest doubles ranking?
Like 180.
Mm-hmm. 180. That's what yep. I thought. You know, I have three highlights here of your pro career, and I'm just going to ask you to kind of react to each of those, and then anything else you want to add in there. Okay. The first one I have is, you know, you were able to get a wild card into the qualifying at Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you play Pablo Andujar, and who was like 52 in the world at that point in time, yes. which tells you a little bit about the tournament at Cincinnati yes. being a master series,
yes.
you know, event. And you have 3 match points in that match.
Yep.
And just a little unlucky, didn't get it done. But what was it like to play Cincinnati, having gone there yeah. so many times as a young player, and to be in that position to beat a great player like Andujar? Oh,
it was real cool to get to play that tournament. Like I said, I you know, went there a lot growing up, every year dreaming of playing that tournament. So to get to play it was pretty incredible. The way it kind of came about was I didn't have a lot of time to think about it. I was coming back from a tournament, I think in Illinois, where I was just finishing up, and I know you definitely helped me get that wild card. And I think what happened was, I was kind of the first alternate, and someone pulled out or got in. I think it was Steve Johnson actually who got direct acceptance in, or he got the wild card into the main draw, and so a spot opened up. And didn't really see it until the draw came out about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And I'm pulling into town back home in Louisville and kind of pull up the draw and see my name in it and see that I play about, you know, third match on tomorrow. So, you know, try to wrap your mind around that plan for the first time. But I think yeah. it was probably a good thing. I didn't have too much time to think about it and, you know, just had to just go up there. And I just had played a lot of matches coming from another tournament, so I was, you know, ready to go. So just drive up that morning and, you know, get ready, warm up, play the match. Played on, I think, not the grandstand, but like the court right after the grandstand, which was a new court there, really cool to play on. First set, just a little, the nerves got the best of me a little bit, a little too consistent and for me, and I think I lost 6-2, something like that. And that relaxed me a little bit, just kind of like, all right, like, let's calm down here. Let's put some balls in play here and see what happens. And started playing great. He's kind of a clay court guy. I think his tournament before this was clay court, and going back to that, taking time away from trying to play big, really kind of started paying off.
Right.
Won the second set, got up an early break in the third, held that break all the way to 5-4, had a match point at 5-3, missed a return, and then he wins that game 5-4. I'm up 40-15 and come in on a running a forehand approach. He hits a running backhand passing shot winner, and then I think I threw in a double. a little bit. And then, yeah, the occasion, you know, would have been pretty sweet to get that win, and then play another fellow American, Tim Smiechik, in the, for the final round of qualifying, would have been pretty cool. But the opportunity was there. I'm glad how I competed. Obviously, pretty pretty bummed I didn't get one of those three match points. But that's why he's probably top, you know, 50 in the world, is because even down match point, he still comes up with the goods and makes me earn the match to the very end. So it was a cool moment for sure.
Yeah, just so you know, and I think you do know this, that spot opened up, and Bruce Flory called me and said, "No, I'm willing to give this to Eric, but I notice he's in a tournament, you know, at another site." And I said, "Yeah, he lost." And he said, "Well, call him." And I couldn't reach you, you know, for whatever the reason, I couldn't reach you. And he said, "Okay, look, here's the deal. Essentially, I'm going to give him the wild card because you're telling me he's going to be here. Is he going to be here, you know, for the match?" And I said, "Bruce, look, I'm telling you, there's no way in the world he's not going to be there. You know, if I have to drive, you know, and meet him on the road, driving back from Edwardsville or wherever it is, you know, he's going to be there." And he goes, "Okay, because if I give him the wild card and he doesn't show, you know, we lose our wild card. And this is the ATP tournament. It's not like the ATP will never figure this out. They're all right here looking over my shoulder and telling me I shouldn't give him this wild card, you know, unless I have a confirmation from him that he will be there." And I said, "Look, trust me, he's going to be there." So yeah. the next one I have is your goal always growing up was to play in the U.S. Open. It was the thing that was always out there for you to make it to the U.S. Open. And it was it 2016?
Yes, it was 2016. Yes. Yes, it was.
So in 2016, you get in the main draw of the U.S. Open. Tell me about that.
So I played, they had a U.S. Open playoff, go up to, where was it? Yale University in Connecticut, where they hosted a women's tournament. And they also had this. I won the playoff to get to that point in singles, doubles, and mixed doubles. So I felt like I had a good chance between one of them to get there. So I had a tough one in singles, lost first round, pretty disappointing, not thrilled with how I played. So then really just had doubles and mixed doubles to focus on, and doubles was up, and mixed doubles started like the day after, or the day of the finals of the doubles. So my partner, Nick Meister, and I, who I played with for about a year, at least at that point, we really complimented each other. We did well in doubles, had a lot of success. We go in and he lost in the finals of singles. So we were both pretty disappointed in that. And we get to the finals, play some guys who we knew pretty well. They had a lot of success in doubles, but they had, I think, just stopped playing maybe like 6 months before. And so we, you know, had a tough semifinal match. And, you know, we thought that was really kind of the finals. And so we get to the finals and realize, you know, these guys came to play and they really took it to us. We got stomped the first set and we kind of found our feet a little bit in the second and won that. And it was a 10-point breaker for the third, and down match point, we saved that and we win the match. And I just remember after that and how kind of special that was for both of us for the first time to play the U.S. Open. I'd never played juniors there. You know, a lot of guys, you know, they had played juniors before qualifying or something. And so the very first time I, you know, played the U.S. Open was main draw, which was pretty cool, to say the least.
Who did you all play?
We played, oh man, I can never, what is their names? I know their faces.
Peja
and Kubat, Lucas Kubat.
Yeah.
Played them. I think they were the 12 seeds, got up to a great start. Got up 3-0, 4-1, got back on serve, but we had five or six set points that would sneak out the first set, and Kubot was serving, and he just kept going body serve on me, and I just could not get out of the way every time.
Hey, now, to be fair, though, that's a big guy hitting great. Yes,
and I remember watching him in the finals of Wimbledon a couple of years later, and he was doing the same thing in the same situation. And the I can't remember who he's playing, but he couldn't figure it out in the finals of Wimbledon. So I felt a little bit better about my inability to get that serve back over the net. But they were a good team. Clearly, we wanted to win that match and disappointed, but it was really cool. Having a lot of family, having you there, you came up for that, which was pretty special. So obviously we're disappointed to not, you know, get the first round win, but the guys we played weren't too bad. And it was, you know, a dream come true. And, you know, what I looked, thought about as a kid, I remember in a kid just watching, practicing how I would walk out at the US Open and, you know, and so I remember walking out on the court and thinking, man, this is like what I practiced as a kid. Don't mess up the walkout. So so it was just a cool moment. And yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The crazy thing I remember about that match is the mm-hmm. rain and the delays yep. and the, you know, and how just horrible that was, you know, because you're ready to play yep. and then it rains and they get the court dry yep. and then it rains
and you get there early. We yeah. qualified and we got there 5 or 6 days early, you know, so you're just soaking it up and right. then by the time match day comes, you're so ready to go, and then you, like you said, the rain delays came, and so it was tough, but still pretty cool.
Yeah, well, hey, what else about your pro career, any other highlights that you want to mention?
Man, there's a lot of them. Those are definitely the highlights. Playing in Lexington every year, you know, on the home courts was definitely a highlight. Coming back home, getting to play in front of that crowd, always played night match, was really cool. Had a lot of heartbreakers in that one. Had a lot of let's see here. I think another, probably one of the other highlights I would throw in there was up in Newport, Rhode Island, playing against Mark Philippoussis. I remember, which is on grass. It's at the Tennis Hall of Fame. They have every July. And
right.
I remember seeing Mark Philippoussis around, you know, the day before the draws come out. And a lot of times they would do the power shares, kind of the senior tour a little bit, and they would kind of start a tournament, an ATP tournament, with a match with one of those guys. And so I thought he was just around playing one of those matches before to kind of kick off the tournament. And sure enough, I look and he's in the draw a little bit, and he was, I think it was his birthday, actually. I think it was his 39th birthday a little bit. So he had been off the tour a little bit. But as some of you guys may know, he was made the finals of Wimbledon a couple of times, top 5 player in the world. And he specialized on grass with his big serve and getting to the net. So these courts were old school grass courts where you wanted to serve in volley because the bounces, you never knew how good they were going to be. And so I was like, man, this guy who hasn't right. played in a while, you know, so I feel like I need to win this match. You know, he hasn't played in a while. I shouldn't have the upper hand. But yet, I mean, this court surface plays right into his strike zone, into his wheelhouse a little bit. So getting that win 7-6, 7-6 over him on a grass court was pretty special. Was pretty cool moment as well.
Yeah. Right. Well, man, listen, thanks for taking the time today to talk to us about all these different phases of your career and what you feel like made you successful. And, you know, I can just tell you, you know, I've watched you play from probably age 9 to 29. And no one has ever represented our state better than you have. And no one is more deserving of being in this Hall of Fame than you are. And just congratulations on all your success. And, you know, thank you for the work you're doing with some juniors now, and hopefully that's going to pay dividends. Absolutely. For our state.
Well, thank you, Coach. It's always fun to reminisce, and thank you for everything you did for me, which is I can't put into words how much you helped me in my career in more ways than you'll ever know. But I guess if I just want to leave everyone with this, and kind of what I've learned to be true and even more true today, kind of being in the business world a little bit and also still teaching a little bit, and how important it is to surround yourself with, obviously, to be a good businessman or athlete or whatever, you have to have some skills and good characteristics for sure. But how important it is to surround yourself with good people and people that are going to motivate you and push you to be where you need to be and keep you on that right path. And I was so fortunate all throughout my career and still today, kind of what I'm doing in construction a little bit, how important it is to be around those good people. And you can't really go anywhere without that. And I was so fortunate from day one with my family, from my junior career with my trainers and coaches, to college, all my teammates, and you and Coach Kaufman. And so how important that is to just surround yourself with people that are going to push you and, you know, have high morals and characteristics. And that's definitely what helped me in my career for sure.
Well, there's no question what you're saying is true, but let me just take it one step further. Okay. You made everybody around you better, including your college coaches. We were all better because you were of such a high character. You know, you brought the best out of all your coaches and all teammates. And there's not always a lot of people like that. So,
Eric, coaching is fun.